This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will focus on music therapy in individuals with dementia living in the assisted living setting as a medical student initiative. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, published a recent study reflecting the burden of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, or ADRD, in the United States. In 2014, there were 5 million people with ADRD, with a growth projection to 13.9 million people by the year 2060. Minority populations were expected to be especially affected. A 2018 report by the Alzheimer's Association showed that total payments to care for individuals with ADRD were greater than $250 billion. There is hope that with earlier diagnosis, a significant amount of money could be saved in the treatment of ADRD, but in those who already have the diagnosis, how can we best approach individuals who also have mood disorders or agitation or otherwise described adverse behaviors and rely on antipsychotics or transitions to inpatient geriatric psychiatric units? Are there other options to provide non-pharmacologic quality care for the individual with ADRD? Well, perhaps. According to its website, the Society for the Arts and Dementia Care uses visual and performing arts to improve the lives of those living with dementia. One of the Society's aims is to better understand the ability to cope with dementia using creativity to improve quality of life. Similarly, the American Music Therapy Association has specific guidelines for training, certifying, and administering music therapy and assessing music therapy outcomes. And Stanford University's Dr. Linda Gerdner developed a music therapy guideline in 1996 through her work in developing and testing the use of individualized music for the management of agitation in ADRD. Her guideline has been implemented worldwide. And Dan Cohen, the executive director of the organization Music and Memory, brought personal playlists, iPods, and headphones to residents in long-term care settings to find renewed meaning and connection in their lives, while reducing the need for medications with improvement of behaviors and mood. How does this all work? How do you bring the arts to the bedside, so to speak, and set up a program and assess outcomes? And does it take a medical team to do it? Well, Winston Liu and his colleagues describe a music program in a 2018 geriatric nursing article entitled Implementation of Personalized Music Listening for Assisted Living Residents with Dementia, and show us how investment and commitment to elder care can come from anywhere, and really to anywhere, in our healthcare continuum. And we're fortunate to have Winston Liu with us now to talk about his project. Winston Liu is a MD-PhD student at Duke University School of Medicine, where his dissertation studies gut microbes and how they're sensed by our bodies. Winston Liu, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thank you so much, Dr. Saltzman. It's really an honor to be here to speak with you.
First off, is it okay if I call you Winston?
Absolutely, Winston is fine.
Great, thank you. So, Winston, your paper discusses how this personalized music program is student-driven and student-run. Mm-hmm. It is unique and highlights the dedication of students to the needs of patients with dementia. I do want to talk to you about your findings, but as always, I have a number of questions first. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you and your fellow students became interested in the idea of supporting individuals with dementia in the assisted living setting, and why assisted living, and how the program was set up and logistics around creating these personalized music programs for residents. And there was a discussion about how you needed to work with external partners and who were they and ombudsmans. And you talk about frameworks that may be foreign to many people, like the REAIM framework. This sounds like such a complex arrangement to manage. Really, lead us through the etiology.
Yeah. Do you want the 30 seconds or the 20 hours?
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think so. It starts, you know, as medical students, you know, we come to medical school to learn how to take care of people. And what you quickly realize is that the vast majority of the time we are trained to take care of people who are in the middle. So not really the kids, not really the elderly, everyone in the middle. And so I think there's always been students at Duke, for example, who wanted the opportunity to work with kind of an older population. I mean, so people have sought out ways that they can do that. And so when the program started, I think now 4 or 5 years ago, there were students who were interested in working with a geriatric population. And specifically, I think because of family reasons, had an interest in geriatric people who may have had some memory impairment. And they had, I think, seen this Alive Inside documentary that Dan Cohen has put together, and were really interested in this idea of bringing personalized music to people who had memory impairment. And so they worked together with one of the faculty members at Duke, Dr. Heidi White, who's just an incredible mentor for all of us. And together, I think we identified the ombudsman for the state of North Carolina, who's a really wonderful person who helped us kind of narrow down what sort of population, what sort of group of people might be the best served for starting this type of a program. Because I think we not only wanted to do personalized music and a geriatric population, but also wanted it to be a service to a group of people who may not have access to that type of treatment and care. And so the ombudsman was somebody who just knew a lot of different facilities throughout North Carolina. And together with her, we identified this particular facility as a place for us to start the program. And it turned out to just be a really amazing and great place for all of us to learn about how this can be put together. So I think the assisted living piece was really just because of this confluence of circumstances that we found this really great place. And since then, this program has grown now. There's been a second group of students who expanded this now to the Veterans Affairs Hospital here at Duke, the VA. And so there's actually a program there as well now that we're doing. So it's been really rewarding to see the program grow over the past couple of years. So in terms of the logistics of setting up the program from the beginning, I think the most difficult piece is getting buy-in from all the different stakeholders at these different locations, especially because the assisted living facility that we particularly were at and interested in was kind of a lower resource facility. A lot of the workers there, the medication technicians, the nurses, the administrators there were really, really overworked. And so the idea, while cool, they thought, you know, interesting, probably would be helpful. But the need to add something on top of it all was, I think, something that they felt nervous about and weren't ready to commit to right away. And so I think that was the biggest struggle in starting this program. We were easily able to apply for some local funding and get funding to buy music equipment for people at the facility. But really just convincing the people at the facility that this was something that was really, really important and would really benefit the residents was something that took a lot of time.
Talk about this REAM framework. It seems to be in a guiding principle, so to speak, of how you approach this project.
No, absolutely. So when we started the project, I think, you know, we wanted to do this as a service project, but we also felt that it was really important to be able to measure something. We thought it was really important to have outcomes from whatever we were doing so that we would be able to assess how far we've come and to always be able to iterate and improve the program over time. And so Dr. White had brought us in with this kind of quality improvement framework. And in that way, I think we'll talk about a little bit later, but how we designed some sort of a survey for us to measure something was really important. And then when we went to submit the paper, the editor of the journal actually suggested that we kind of relook at a lot of our work through this REAM framework. And I thought it was a really great idea. So REAM stands for Reach, Effectiveness, Adoption, Implementation, and Maintenance. And it's just kind of five dimensions for quality improvement projects in which you can not only design, but also on the back end, like we were, evaluate and see kind of where your program stands and maybe rooms that you can improve upon. I think it also really helps to explicitly lay out all these different pieces because it helps people who want to follow in the footsteps of whatever program and build similar programs moving forward. It gives them a really nice template for them to do a similar thing.
In a standardized fashion. Wonderful, wonderful. So extending on this idea of buy-in and getting people to work with you in this project, you discussed working with medication technicians. In the paper, you call them MTs, and I had to pause for a second because I know that in music therapy, they call music therapists MTs. So, but in this case, it stood for medication technicians. As the folks who really did implement the program, for those of us not familiar with medication technicians, can you lead us through their role in the facility and tell us how you essentially won them over in carrying out your music therapy plan? Because in the paper you kind of intimate wasn't magical all at once. And you had regular meetings and a standardized format, and you solicited feedback. Ultimately, did they appear to be eager adopters of the program? You know, was it difficult garnering support in the assisted living setting? You know, you talk about the difference between music as entertainment versus music as a dementia tool, and that seemed to be a barrier. What were the other barriers that you had to overcome? Or did you find that once the pieces were in order, things just kind of moved?
Yeah, so starting with your first question, so the medication technicians, at least at this facility, their primary responsibility was to go around the facility and make sure that every resident receive their medications at the appropriate time of day. And that was the primary thing they were doing. They often assisted some of the other nurses or other techs with daily activities for them, but their primary responsibility was the delivery of medication. And we had talked to the administrator about what sort of people might be the best to be implementing this on the ground. And I guess I should say, from the onset, we felt that it was really, really important that we, as the medical students, were not the ones who were delivering the music every day, because we felt that as medical students, one, we couldn't be there every day. We have to go to class, we have to do our other activities. We could be there maybe once a week, twice a week, but we couldn't be there every day to give them that consistent type of care. And the other thing is, we knew that the people who knew these residents best were these medication technicians and other nurses at the facility who really could be able to assess the impact of this music. And so we quickly identified this group of people as potential leaders for the program. And to get buy-in was a little bit tricky. I would say, as I mentioned, the general sentiment, I think everyone thought this was a cool thing. This was a great idea. Wanted to be involved, raised their hand to volunteer. But when it came to actually implementing it, what we quickly found was that, you know, residents weren't getting music. We had brought in this equipment and we had set this thing up, but it ended up being that, you know, these medication technicians felt that they just didn't have the time to be able to do this. And so what we ended up devising were, I think, three main things that really helped with this. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is we identified particular medication technicians who were more committed than other ones. And they were kind of the on-site champions for this. And it was really, really great to have these people who were just the most excited about it, constantly encouraging their other peers to be involved with this. The second thing that we did is that we implemented these sort of monthly, bi-monthly meetings with the medication technicians. And so every time we visited the facility, we would see them and talk to them through kind of ad hoc, just, you know, see how their day was going. But we implemented these more standardized meetings with them. And they didn't have to be long. They were maybe 5-10 minutes. So maybe on their break quickly, we could talk about it. But that added a level of, I think, accountability to the program. And when they started talking about it together, they started to see that maybe this was valuable and they wanted to participate in more. And then the last thing is, we had built this sort of survey form so they could track the progress of the residents and see for themselves that this was actually beneficial. And so this form, I think, was really, we tried to design it to be as simple as possible so that they wouldn't spend a lot of time on it, but that it would still convey a lot of meaning. And so at those kind of monthly, bi-monthly meetings, we would bring out the forms and they would look at it together. And I think I remember talking to some medication technicians who said, "Oh, wow, I didn't even realize how much of an effect this type of treatment was having on them." And so for us, that sort of started to open the door to a lot of the different medication technicians to be interested. And I think once kind of a critical mass of them were interested, the rest really followed suit.
It's a fantastic story. You are accomplishing in quality what people yearn to do out in other parts of the continuum. You discover individuals that you can empower and feel valued. You give them a project in which they can be champions. You outline a standardized plan, and you help them assess outcomes and see sources of improvement. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was really cool. But then I think it's interesting, as the years went by, what we found was that there was a lot of turnover in this particular facility. And so a lot of the med techs would move on to a different facility or would retire. And I think sometimes the biggest bumps in continuing the program now, I think it's in its sixth year now, was when one of those people who were really committed, one of those champions, left the facility. And there was kind of a void there. And trying to identify the next person wasn't always the easiest task. But I think with enough persistence and just being there and caring about the residents and the facility, we were always able to find someone to fill that role.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Many people make charitable contributions at year end, and our foundation welcomes your support. We are the only foundation dedicated to advancing the interests of PALTC professionals and their commitment to quality patient care. In this holiday season of giving and caring, please help advance our programs and make a generous contribution to our foundation at paltcfoundation.org.
We're talking with Winston Liu about music therapy in the assisted living setting. Winston, it appeared that you generated your results from roughly 20 assisted living residents that were able to participate over time. Discuss your methods for assessing changes from the personalized music therapy. Obviously, there have been studies utilizing music therapy as discussed. Were your findings consistent with the findings of others, or were there some unique nuances in the assisted living residents that were exposed to your therapeutic interventions?
Yeah, so when we designed the metric, we really wanted it to be simple because we knew that we wanted the people who were delivering this particular therapy to be the ones who were also doing the measuring, so that they would be able to see the progress. And so we just had two very, very simple things. We would ask the people passing out the music to first record for each person what their initial state was, what sort of mood level they were, either kind of agitated, just kind of a normal baseline, or more depressed. And then there was a metric of change. So this was just a very simple three-tier again, like some sort of improvement, no change, or some sort of disimprovement. And we had, I think, thought about some more complicated metrics, but really it was just unfeasible in the assisted living facility that we were at to do anything more complicated than that. And then the last piece was there was just an open text box for them if they wanted to add in any sort of comments on that particular day. And I think actually those comments have been sometimes the most interesting. Just meta text will write all sorts of things about, you know, particular artists that a particular resident might have liked, or that they danced a particular amount of time. And that's always really exciting to hear about. So we had this very simple metric. And I think the biggest thing, you know, we did see improvement in a lot of people, and that's why I think the program continued. But the biggest thing I think we to take away is that the results from this type of therapy is extremely heterogeneous. And I think the results lie on a spectrum. When we first watched Alive Inside, I think I maybe thought that every single person who got this music would just jump up and become this brand new person, you know? But what we found was, yes, we had those people. I remember very vividly some residents that, you know, looked forward to getting their music every time, or really started to open up about their past life when that happened. But then there were also residents who had much smaller impacts. I had residents who just never talked, but when they listened to music, would start to smile. Or residents who always sat in a corner by themselves, but with music would get up and move closer to some other people. And some residents who really just, you could almost not tell there was a difference, but when you try to take away music, for example, they would resist and they would tell you that they want to keep listening, or that they would have some sort of physical sign of that. Sure. And so just understanding that there's a range of responses, I think, is important for anyone trying to start this program, because it can be discouraging for people starting if they don't see those huge impacts right away. And I think even those small things, though, are extremely valuable. And even that small improvement in quality of life, I think, is something that those residents and their families are extremely grateful for in the long term.
As we're wrapping up, in the little time we have left, it's typically customary for me to be a little bit provocative, but I'm not going to be too provocative.
Okay.
But, you know, I have to wonder, you know, in the assisted living facility and in the skilled nursing facility, there are activity directors and they offer occasional programs associated with music or art, but these definitely do not represent anything like what you and your colleagues have discussed in your paper. I get the fact that there are financial, personnel, and programmatic challenges, like in some music therapy programs actually having certification. But it seems to me that the return on investment for this type of program is huge. It's going to offer reduction in utilization of staff resources, reduction potentially in medication costs, and obviously, as you have so nicely described, an increase in quality care. And frankly, happiness. From this 4-year study, do you think we can approach this idea of personalized music therapy for patients with dementia as a standard of care in the assisted living setting? I mean, where do we go from here? You chose to publish in a nursing journal. Do you think that nursing will carry the baton, so to speak, in continuing or leading this program? This program shows benefit. How do we get it to continue?
Oh, absolutely. I think several things. Well, I think in terms of the financial piece, this is definitely a lot cheaper than a lot of our other options, which may not even work as well. So I think that piece is very easily resolved, I think. But in terms of whether or not this should be standard of care, I would say, why not, honestly? I think this is something that, you know, in the assisted living setting, I think there's been less data. But for example, in inpatient units, there's been so much data showing that it can benefit people to have music in relieving pain or improving kind of their hospital stay. And so I think definitely this is something that could be implemented in a much bigger scale to help a lot of people to make it happen. I think maybe one of the challenges with this type of intervention is that it really needs to be personalized. We have found that if you don't have the right music, people will not respond. And I think it's really important to be able to have someone have the ability to spend the time to figure out kind of what sort of music would work best for them. But I think even more on top of that, I think there has to be some sort of cultural shift in the way that we think about care for people with memory impairment. I think that, you know, we view things like music or like art as just kind of these extra activities for people, when in fact, I think what we are finding is that these things are just as valuable, just as important as a drug, a pill, some other thing that we really view as a treatment. And I think we should start to view some of these interventions as treatments so that people will be able to take priority on them and make sure they happen, because we know that they work for people. And so I think part of us deciding to publish in a nursing journal was something like that. The idea that really, you know, for example, nurses could be ones that could really, you know, start to push this forward and view this as some sort of piece of treatment for these different people, so that we can start to change the culture a little bit on the way that we think about management.
We have been fortunate to speak with and learn from MD-PhD candidate Winston Liu regarding his geriatric nursing article on personalized music therapy programs for individuals with dementia who live in assisted living facilities. Winston, you are the future in medical care, and thank you so much for spending your time with AMDA on the Go.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And if anybody out there is interested in starting a personalized music listening, feel free to contact us. We would be happy to share whatever advice we could have on starting a program like this.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA on the Go.
Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.